Moncrief on News Talk.
What exactly do you want?
Oh, well, look, it's no big deal, but at least like 60% of what your secret sister out there is saying is like total bullshit.
How could you know that?
Well, just now when you said you were cold, that was a lie, right?
Maybe. Yes.
Yeah, well, anyway, I got this thing I can just tell when someone's lying. It's kind of a thing I do.
That was Poker Face. New episodes every Thursday on Sky Max and Now TV. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon, Sean.
So, Poker Face is kind of, it's an episode a week or a story a week. It's not, you know, there's no kind of long narrative.
There isn't. Like, I have to admit, it was a show that I had fondly forgotten in the sense that I really liked it, but I had kind of forgotten about it. And if a second season had never come along, I wouldn't have been that surprised. And in a year of where like all these prestigious TV shows that were on the air 3 years ago have come back for their second season.
Sure, yeah.
This is perhaps the most pleasant surprise because I've really enjoyed the three episodes that we've had so far. There is a somewhat connecting tissue to it. So it is comes from the creator, Rian Johnson, who people, of course, will know as the writer and director of Knives Out and that one Star Wars movie that people either love or hate. But he created this show specifically with the actress Natasha Lyonne in mind, and he built the character that she plays, Charlie Cale, which just sounds like a good detective, to be honest with you, even though she's not really a detective in the show. He built the entire show around her voice, around her look, around her style, around her mannerisms. She is the engine that drives the whole thing, and Natasha Lyonne herself has written a couple of the episodes and has directed them as well. So, I mean, she is as much a creative role in this as he is. And in the first season, we met Charlie in the opening episode in a dingy looking Las Vegas casino where she was kind of like a cocktail waitress. And a friend of hers gets quickly murdered by a baddie, and she goes on the run from from the casino owner. And the first season follows her basically drifting through the US from town to town, taking small jobs and odd jobs, meeting oddballs and murderers left, right and center. And it's not that she's a detective, but as we heard her say in the clip there, she has this uncanny ability to tell when people are lying, as in that's the whole kind of crux around which the show
is. Yeah, but they don't kind of, it's not like she was bitten by a radioactive liar or something. You know, it's just a thing.
It's just a thing, yeah. And you just got to go with it,
yeah.
Right? And you just got to accept that she knows when someone is lying,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Now, they play, like, this is Rian Johnson, and if people saw Knives Out and the arguably a little bit disappointing follow-up, Glass Onion, but there's a third one coming, I think it's called Waking Dead Men or something like that, yeah, later on this year. Not to always be finding that Irish actor angle in it, but there's two Irish actors in it, Darryl McCormick and that other much famous
and the
one.
Other one, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, basically he writes a brilliant mystery,
yeah,
right, every,
yeah,
single time. And Charlie is not a detective, she just finds her way in, and it is like Columbo in the sense that this is not the whodunit. We know exactly who done it. It's not even the how done it, because we see them pretty much do it.
Yeah,
it's can she catch them out with it, whatever that kind, yeah, of thing would be. So it has these very long leads in where it reveals the murder. So what I like about it is, like, if you compare it to other kind of cases of the week, like let's say Elspeth, which is an enjoyable kind of like case of the week show, right? Like, I mean, they are just a rotating selection of characters and actors fulfilling roles of whatever, you know, whatever location they had available that week. Is it the Met? Is it the ballet? Is it the museum? Whatever. It's suddenly the killer is an academic. Suddenly, yeah, the killer is a ballerina, right? Here, however, because we have these long leads in of the murder, it could be 15 to 20 minutes before Charlie even, you know, reveals herself. We have a better sense of who the character is before they are, you know, ultimately killed off. And then the murderer is always just trying to get away with it. So we are watching them try to dodge Charlie. Now, they don't necessarily know her superpower, although she's constantly telling people, right? So we also get to see her play with that. And also they explore the kind of ramifications of it, as in she can tell they're lying, but that doesn't mean she knows what the truth is,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And like, there have been times where they are aware of this, so they will use language that is not necessarily a lie, but is not necessarily a truth, and all that kind of stuff, right? Now, the other thing is, because of Rian Johnson being attached to it, the quality of the, you know, of the revolving cast of victims and murders is incredible. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. Like, the first episode of this season sees Cynthia Erivo playing five different roles, or six different roles, actually. But, like, the other people in this season are people that, like, are incredibly famous comedians and people who perhaps haven't, you know, were once in the limelight and have faded a little bit. But, like, it's just a really interesting mix. So you have Giancarlo Esposito, who is in every TV show. Katie Holmes plays his wife in the second episode. The comedian John Mulaney has a huge role in the third episode, along with Richard Kind. A kind of recurring character is Simon Helberg, who people will recognize as basically one of the nerds in... What was that show called? That, Bazinga, whatever that was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Big Bang Theory.
Thank you very much, right? Not the main guy, but one of the lesser nerds in the Big Bang Theory. Sorry, I didn't take my vitamins this morning. Yeah. And he plays an FBI agent who's pretty useless at his job, but he keeps accidentally running into Charlie Cale, who solves all his cases for him and therefore keeps getting promoted.
Okay. While
she's increasingly poor. All in... It's really charming. It's really funny. It looks gorgeous. It's shot really well. I had forgotten kind of it existed, but I'm really glad it's back.
So that, but it doesn't become wearing. In like, Columbo was a cop. Therefore, there was a reason why he was investigating murders. Is it always happenstance that she tends to become involved with these things? Or is it Mr. Bazinga gives it, you know, gives
no,
her a call?
It's always happenstance. And, like, I think they even play with the silliness of that, right? There's this recurring motif in the beginning of the third season where she's still on the run. I mean, she was on the run in season one. She's on the run from someone else in season two, shall we say. And it opens with this, you know, montage of her being chased by these inept Las Vegas hoodlums who keep shooting at her from afar, and she just manages to get away, and then she's doing another job and they're shooting at her from afar. I found it very funny and very charming. Will that joke eventually wear thin? Yes, but ultimately I think they'll have thought of another joke by the time that comes around.
Right, okay, our next show is called The Assembly. You can catch up on the Virgin Media Player. Here's a clip.
Now Luke is going to do a performance for us.
Oh, fantastic.
And because you've been doing Macbeth, he'd like to do a scene from the play with you.
Oh my goodness, Luca. Right, okay.
Oh, go on.
What scene are we doing? Don't know. I'll just try and catch up.
Heavy summons lies like lead upon me, and yet I would not sleep. Merciful powers restraining me, the cursed force that nature gives way to in repose.
Okay, it's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Though, I don't know... Well, Akko, you'll tell us, but does it... The people who are being interviewed, does it reveal anything that they wouldn't necessarily have revealed in a one-to-one setting?
Yes and no, right? So this is the origin of the show is a strange, you know, its path to the screen is a little unusual. So it began as a French TV show that was created by the directors of a quite well-known French comedy called The Intouchables. It was remade with Bryan Cranston a few years later. They'd be well, these two guys, I know, their names are Eric Toledano and Olivier Nakache. And it was... In it, it involved a group of 30 people on the autistic spectrum or with other additional cognitive disabilities being given the floor to interview somebody well known. And the French one has been running now for a few years. And I mean, the cast of people that they have interviewed is, put it this way, even if you don't know any French, you would recognize some of the names. The biggest one being the president, Emmanuel Macron, right? So the BBC picked it up and filmed it with Michael Sheen last year. And then they actually passed on it and said it was too expensive to produce, which is an odd thing to say in a show that could hardly be that expensive to produce. And ITV have picked it up. And it has run, however, in Denmark, in Spain, in Sweden, in... the Netherlands, all over the place. And the thing I'm struck by the most is when I did my homework and I looked up, you know, I was on the Danish like broadcaster going, who's that?
Yeah.
And, like, in every other version, what I liked is the prime minister or, you know, political leaders of the country have been grilled by these people. And I want to say that ultimately I found the show very, very charming and very interesting. But I agree with what you said there, that, like, I don't know if I necessarily learned anything more about the person being interviewed, but that isn't really the purpose of the interview either.
Okay.
The purpose of the interview is kind of just to show, as I saw it, the kind of shared humanity that every single person has, right? As in, you see these celebrities, and in this case, it's Danny Dyer, David Tennant, Jade Thirlwall, and Gary Lineker last night, go in and be... told right at the beginning, this is an interview, you were going to ask you anything. And I mean, they get asked the most random things.
And the people asking the questions.
Yes, we should, is
30 people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the same cast almost pretty much from the BBC pilot a year ago who have now transferred over to ITV. And it always ends then with a musical number as well, where they do a bit of singing, right? Mm. And they ask incredibly random things. I mean,
and they're all on the spectrum.
Or they all have, or other intellectual disabilities.
Yeah,
and they all ask incredibly personal questions, such as, you know, the age gap between you and your partner, or what about that time your wife kicked you out and took all the money out of your bank account, or banal questions like when did you last go to the dentist, or who's your dentist? And it's whatever appears to them as the hot button issue that they want to talk about. And what I liked about it is, obviously, the stars are probably not coached, but like very much informed. You just got to go with it with whatever they ask you. And Danny Dyer in particular, who's probably the least famous of these four people, right? But he was incredibly giving in his interactions with them and not pulling his punches and being very straightforward and honest and cursing and getting up and doing mock fight scenes with them. David Tennant was a bit more reserved, but I did like that clip that we played there where he's, you know, obviously forgetting his lines to Macbeth. While carrying it out with one of the participants. It is an interesting look at just how people on the spectrum and off the spectrum interact with each other when they just sit down to talk to each other. And
yeah.
I found it a very interesting, novel look at a chat show, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is not a kind of chat show I've ever seen before, but I could see it becoming a staple because it's just very charming to watch.
Yeah, okay, right. We'll move on to our third show of the day. A bit of a French theme today. How do you pronounce it, James?
Étoile.
Étoile. Here's the clip.
Why am I here?
You know why.
You don't need me here. You don't want me here. I was very happy where I was.
You're never happy anyway.
My life. I decide.
See, this is why I thought we should have a phone call to discuss.
I don't need a phone call. I'm standing right here. I want to know why you insisted that I come here, to this place, with the blinding light everywhere. Why is there so much light? You think these are such wonderful people to look at? You think their dancing needs to be highlighted by so much water? Do you make anyone take class here?
Julian, does anybody need me to be somewhere?
No.
I don't like being a chess piece.
Anybody at all?
I'm not chattel.
You're good. Schedule's clear.
Could you double check?
Right, that's Étoile. You can stream all episodes now on Amazon Prime Video. I want James Dempsey to give me an A for saying that. So, right, what's the premise?
Okay,
of this?
So this comes from Amy Sherman-Palladino, who would be well known as the writer, and her husband, I should say, Daniel Palladino. They made Gilmore Girls together. And then they had a huge hit with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which was, I have to admit, I never warmed to it quite as much as the American critics and Emmys did, because it was a huge success at the Emmys. But in between those two shows, they also had a show called Bunheads. Now, Amy Sherman-Palladino is known for her like whip-smart, snappy, pop culture-laden dialogue. And her mother was a professional dancer. Her father was a stand-up comedian. So she is mining into her own life. And I found it, the most interesting thing I found about this was she herself was on track to become a professional dancer and was auditioning for Cats in the 80s when she got signed on to the writing staff of Roseanne. And basically that kickstarted her career in comedy. So this, you know, when Mrs. Maisel ended on Amazon, they basically made a deal with her to produce something else. And she wanted to make a show about ballet. And it is about the New York Ballet, like this fictionalized version of the New York Ballet Company, which is a bit down on its heel. It's losing its audience, and as is the Parisian version. And they decide as a stunt, they're going to swap some of their principal dancers and choreographers and, the person that does that thing.
Conductors.
Thank you very much. The conductor and
Mr. Bazinga is their new conductor,
right? And for a season, in order to raise the profile of both and hopefully get people back in seats and watching ballet. Now, it involves a cast of characters and actors you would recognize if you've watched any Sherman-Palladino shows in the past. Luke Kirby had a huge role in Mrs. Maisel, but there are many others. And it is half in French and half in, let's say, American.
Yeah.
Right? And it is a comedy about fish out of water in Paris and New York. Now, I like some of Amy Sherman-Palladino's work. I like Gilmore Girls. I've never seen Bunheads, which was her show about a ballet teacher in small-town America. I was so-so on Mrs. Maisel, and I'm mostly so-so on this as well. When the dialogue is great I can't deny it. It's funny. It's charming. It's really, it's, I mean, we heard in the clip there, it's delivered at, like, it's delivered toot sweet. It's very funny, right? But here we have a cultural mishmash. We have an American writer with a very American sensibility writing French people.
Yeah.
And they talked about how they struggled to find a translator who could, you know, interpret. It's not really a translator that they need. They need an interpreter to understand how to make this kind of joke work in a French context. And I had a cursory look at the French press today to see what they were making of it, and they were far more savage of it than the American press were. Now, I think it has arrived also without any fanfare. I mean, I saw it on my Amazon Prime, and I was like, what's that? It looks a bit foreign. I'm not going to watch that. And it wasn't until I heard that it was actually an Amy Sherman Palladino show that I thought I'd give it a go. I finished it. I got to the end. It is charming and it's funny, but it's not by any means a standout hit that you must sit down and see. But if you are missing that Gilmore Girls, you know, hole in your heart, and you need it filled with jokes about standing on point and other pop culture dialogue that I can't quite remember, it will absolutely scratch that itch.
Yeah.
100%. But is it going to be a breakthrough show? No. Is it an expensive show? Oh my God, yes. Because the cast of dancers, there's two corps de ballet. There's one in New York, there's one in Paris. They filmed both in New York and in Paris. There are endless dance sequences, choreographed, which must have been incredibly expensive to shoot. Not to mention the fact that, like, it's just an Amazon show, so they probably had a big budget to begin with. And it seems to me a little wasted because I haven't heard anyone else talking about it.
Yeah. Because, if it's fish out of water, a ballet company in Paris and one in New York, are they that different to each other? Really? I mean, if the ballet company in Paris went to work in a pizzeria, then you got fish out of water. But that, yeah, less than convincing. Poker Face, new episodes every Thursday on Sky Max and Now TV. The Assembly, you can catch up on the Virgin Media Player and Etoile. Stream all episodes now on Amazon Prime Video. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.